So welcome back, everybody. And I'm going to start our exploration of ritual and devotional practices with a kind of shorter talk tonight, reviewing some of the points that Carrie made, maybe sharing some of the thoughts that Tori offered when we were planning our Sunday sit presentations of this topic. And then you'll have a chance to share some of your own thoughts and experiences with each other in this area of ritual and devotion. Now, when Carrie was here last week, she said that when she knew she was going to be talking about ritual and devotion, she was just thrilled with this topic. But I gotta admit, when I heard that this was going to be our topic for this month, my first reaction was a kind of confusion. And I thought, well, well, what's that going to be about? Rituals and devotional practices? I mean, I didn't feel like my practice included all that much in the way of ritual and devotional practices. And I wasn't sure I even really wanted to have it include a whole lot of ritual and devotional practices. And maybe some of you have that kind of feeling too, which isn't a surprising feeling to have. Because as Carrie mentioned last week, in our Western insight meditation tradition especially, ritual and devotional practices aren't such a big thing. And I think maybe for many of us, it's kind of a relief that they are not such a big thing, at least not in the way we usually think of them. There's not so much in the way of, elaborate ceremonies. We don't really perform acts of devotion in the sense of worshiping or praying to gods or goddesses, nothing like that. And in fact, the teachings tell us not to put our faith in rites and rituals. What's important is really seeing the truth for yourself. But as we learned from Carrie's talk last week, and I also learned from some of my conversations with Tori, there are other ways to think about devotion and ritual. And I maybe first we can kind of consider what we actually mean by devotion. Last week, Carrie talked about devotion in a way that's very different from the act of worshiping someone or something. She talked about devotion as inhabiting our deepest aspirations. And if we think about it this way, in that sense, any act we do that really reflects our deepest aspirations is an act of devotion. So taking time to speak kindly to a stranger or donating to a charity, getting up early to do your morning meditation practice, going outside in the evening to spend time in the quiet and feel the night air and see the stars. I mean, all those could be considered devotional practices. And that kind of understanding, at least for me, really opens this whole area wide up and makes me feel like, in a sense, our whole life could be seen as an act of devotion. Carrie also talked about devotional practices as practices that encourage our wholesome desire for wisdom and non-harming, the Pali word, this chanda, this kind of desire to really find freedom. And that's a wonderful thing. What encourages us in that path is beautiful, whatever it may be. And she also talked about the way that devotional practices can put us in touch with a more holistic way of seeing things. When we're carrying out devotional practices, we're not just using our mind. We're using all of our senses. We're maybe touching into what feels more intuitive, not just logic and reason. And that can really make the practice so much more whole, more embodied. And she also talked about how these practices draw us toward beauty and toward a quickening and movement of the heart, and also towards a sense of communion with that which isn't known, kind of the sense of the mystery, what we can maybe touch, but we can't really define or describe, that sense of the sacred. And also the sense that in devotion, there's a very deep feeling of honor and respect. And this can be honor and respect for the Dhamma, for the teachings, honor and respect for the Buddha, honor and respect for each other, for the Sangha, honor and respect for all of life. Really, kind of that sense of holding everything as precious. And all of these understandings, I mean, they really fit so well with the sense of what our practice is really about. So when we begin to think about these things, we can maybe feel, well, devotion is not such a faraway thing. In our teachers' meeting last month to plan our Sunday sit presentations for this topic, Furry also offered some really wonderful perspectives on rituals and devotional practices. And this sort of is a kind of a complementary view, a little bit different language, but very much in line with what Carrie talked about. So Tweri talked about how rituals and devotional practices are practices that help us to get into alignment with the essential teachings and really support our commitment to the practice and our connection to the Dharma in a way that's really alive for us. And so they help us to develop a relationship with the three refuges, the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, so that they're really alive in the practice. And so we feel like we really, truly are going for refuge to someone or something that we have a real relationship with. And they help us to develop a relationship with the spirit of unconditional love through practices like metta and the Brahma Viharas, really putting us in touch with that sense of kindness and caring for all beings, no matter what. They help us to develop a relationship with the Eightfold Path too. So there's a sense that the teachings are really alive, and we relate to them in a way that means something to us, that we're actually living them instead of just studying them or knowing about them. And then also these devotional practices are important because they help us to recognize and remember that this practice is really about more than self-help or psychological understanding, as useful as those things are and as important as those are. We really go beyond that. Our practice is a spiritual practice, and it's connected with the sacred, with the unconditioned. And rituals and devotional practices can remind us of that and help us to maintain that attitude and connection with what is really a sense of the sacred. And I think we also get the sense from these different things that Carrie has spoken about and Tweri talked about to us in our planning meeting, that it isn't the rituals in themselves that really are so important and so powerful, but it's more the understanding that these rituals represent and the view that they help us to remember and the attitude of mind and heart that they reinforce. And because they're so connected really with our understanding and our attitude, rituals and devotional practices are really personal, and there's no right way to do them. And so we need to find our own ways of working with ritual and devotion and of connecting with the sacred in our practice. The kinds of rituals and acts that, you know, really speak to us and really move our hearts. And there are so many different things. You know, for example, the act of meditation in itself can be devotional. Our ritual can be as simple and basic as our daily sitting or showing up to sit with the Sangha every week as we're doing here. Or it might involve something that's closer to what we normally think about as a ritual, chanting the refuges and precepts, doing metta practice with the chants and the words, maybe maintaining an altar with flowers and candles and a statue of the Buddha at home, or the practice of dana. This can be considered a ritual and a devotional practice too, because when we offer dana, we're devoting our resources to the support of our teachers, to our sangha, to the teachings. It's an act of devotion. So when we consider this, you know, we see that even in our bare bones Western Vipassana practice, we do more things than we realize that probably could be considered rituals and devotional practices. And maybe if we think about it, we have a closer relationship with ritual and devotion already than we really ever thought that we did. We can also consider, too, that there are various kinds of rituals, rituals that develop community, rituals that develop the heart, rituals that bring us to the mystery and the sacred. And we might relate to the different types of rituals in different ways, too. So, for example, maybe we have a very strong appreciation for the rituals that we do in community, because we have a sense of the way they contribute to feeling like a sangha and bringing us together. But on the individual level, we may feel that our awareness practice in itself is the only devotional practice we need to really open our heart and touch into the sacred. Or for some of us, our most important devotion is through the practice of metta, and using that ritual to connect with the unconditional love that can touch all beings. And either of those is fine, or any sort of combination that works for you is fine. But it's also fine to maybe take time to explore and question and ask yourself if maybe a stronger connection with devotion, or maybe a different way of acting out your devotion, might strengthen and deepen and enliven your practice. It might be doing something. It might be more a matter of just your view and attitude. So it doesn't hurt to kind of consider this if you haven't really thought about it very much. And I think that's something that really has been coming up for me as we've explored this topic. One of the things Carrie said last week that really moved me was a quote from one of her teachers, Jennifer Wellwood, who said that in our practice, we become devotees of reality. And I really loved that, because I felt that that was a wonderful way of expressing what devotion means in the context of our Vipassana practice. Because when we're doing our Vipassana practice, we really are devotees of reality. You know, we're not so much devotees of any god or goddess or guru, not even so much maybe of the Buddha himself in the sense of worship, although of course we feel, you know, a lot of gratitude, a lot of love, and a lot of devotion to him and to the teachings. But in a way, more than even that, above everything, and I think the Buddha would probably concur, is that we are devotees of the truth and of seeing clearly the way things are. Sometimes on Sunday afternoons, I join in with the online sit that Vipassana Hawaii does. And so yesterday afternoon, I did that, and I was listening to a talk by Michelle McDonald. And she mentioned that she has a ritual of making an offering of a flower, you know, just a flower that she might find in her garden or in the area around where she lives. And she says that when she offers this flower, she offers it as an offering to impermanence, this fragile flower that blooms and it's gone. It really is a reminder to her, making this offering is a reminder to her of the fragility, of the preciousness of all life. So it's a way of, you know, touching in with that sense of all, that all life is precious and all life is holy. So I thought, here is a beautiful example of a ritual that really is devotion to the way things are, devotion to the truth of things, not devotion to a deity or something like that, but just devotion to the Dhamma, to the way things are. So this is something to also, you know, think about. And in our actual meditation practice, when we're on the cushion, we're devotees of reality too. And that we're devotees of the present moment, of just this, of what's actually occurring right now. I remember when I was on my very first retreat, I was lucky enough to get a kind of sense of the beauty of this devotion to just what's now, you know, sort of finding that when I was really paying attention, there was a sense in which colors were brighter, tastes were more vivid, sounds were more beautiful, my experience of a life was fuller. And I remember thinking, you know, if I'm really present for whatever is happening, I don't need anything else. This is enough. And at the time, I didn't even realize the depth of that understanding. I mean, I kind of felt this specialness without knowing exactly what I was thinking. But because of feeling that specialness, I knew that this was my practice. And, you know, this sort of reminds me, if you're familiar with the Zen ox herding pictures, it's sort of like that picture where the seeker just catches that first glimpse of the ox and is like, you know, they say a nightingale warbles on a twig, the sun shines on undulating willows, there stands the ox, where could he hide, that splendid head, those stately horns, what artists could portray them. So there's this sense of connecting with something, wow, this is really special. And I think the devotional practices, even, and maybe even especially the devotion of awareness, really helps us to connect with that place. And I think too, we should remember that our Vipassana practice is a devotional practice in the sense that it's really a practice of love, even though we don't always think about it that way. Because when we practice Vipassana, we bring our full attention to each object, to each moment. And really, what is love but the willingness to give something our full attention or someone our full attention? Really seeing it clearly, accepting without judgment. That's love. So our practice is a practice of love. Another thing that Carrie talked about in connection with devotion. And ritual is how, in ritual and devotion, there's often a sense of learning by doing. It's not so much thinking about something, but doing an act with all of our senses. And in that doing, there's often a sense also of doing the same ritual over and over, of returning, of repetition. And with that returning and repetition, there can be a sense of, you know, collecting our energy, building our concentration. And this aspect might be important for some of us, you know, as a component of devotional practices. For one thing, as I mentioned before, when we really pay attention to something or someone and we're willing to return to that thing over and over and give us its full attention, it's devotion. And in that devotion, you know, we can have a sense of really seeing and connecting with whatever it is we're paying attention to, seeing its true beauty, seeing its real preciousness, its rarity, how it's only there for the briefest minute, just in that way. And also this practice of returning and continuity of attention, whether it's to a single object like the breath, the way we do in concentration practice, or to changing objects the way we do in Vipassana. Just having that continuity of attention, that continuity of mindfulness that develops, this really opens the mind to some very, very beautiful states too. Interest, energy, rapture, bliss, tranquility, equanimity, you know, all those really beautiful mind states we talk about when we talk about the seven factors of enlightenment, and that we feel maybe especially when we're on retreat and our concentration and our continuity of mindfulness really deepen. So there's a sense in which devotional practices can help us to kind of enter a special and sacred space in the mind where we can feel the sacredness more clearly and fully. And both Carrie and Tori also talked about how rituals and devotional practices help us to maintain our commitment. You know, Carrie talked about the overlap of devotion and diligence. And in the sense, there's that sense when devotion is present, that diligence is natural. It's not just about duty, because we feel like we should do something. It's done out of love, because we want to do this thing. And as Carrie mentioned, in the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, we're encouraged to practice with ardency and with a sense of devotion. So, you know, bringing that sense of real connection into our practice. And Carrie talked a little bit about Ajahn Suchito and how important devotion is to him, and the way that he said that how rituals take us out of our task-oriented mentality and help us to do things with a sense of offering. And I think that's a really beautiful way of approaching our practices, you know, this sense of doing them from a sense of love, from a sense of peace. Not because we feel this is something we have to do or we ought to do, but something that really can come from a sense of love. And there's also the fact that rituals provide us with a kind of structure, you know, and in that way they keep us going, keep us steady through the ups and downs of our feelings and our experiences, which we know we're going to have. And we know, you know, that there's going to be change. It's not going to be all bliss after we get to some blissful place. It just doesn't work that way. And so in that sense of having practices that we turn to, rituals that we return to, we create some stability and we help develop that sense of faith that Carrie talked about. You know, how devotion is a kind of a sense of faith energy where we have a trust that keeping to the path is taking us in the place where we want to go, even if we're not quite sure really what's unfolding in that next step. So thinking about this topic over this past, you know, week and a half or so, I've started to realize that this topic of ritual and devotion is really the perfect thing for us to be moving to after a whole month talking about relationship. Because these kind of practices are really all about relationship. Relationship with our deepest aspirations. Relationship with the Buddha, with the Dharma, with the Sangha, with each other, with the sacred, with the mystery of our practice, relationship with all beings. So it's a huge thing, really. And, you know, I think over these last week or two, I've really kind of undergone a big change in my thinking about this topic from feeling like it didn't really have so much to do with my practice to thinking that, I mean, wow, it has everything to do with my practice. So much more than I realized. And maybe some of you, as you've been pondering ritual and devotion and what they mean to you, might have come to the same sort of revelation. So let's sit together for a few moments. So now we have time for some small group discussion. And for the people on Zoom, you know, one of our wonderful tech people, maybe, I'm not sure who's doing it. Oh, okay, we'll be dividing you up into small groups and, you know, maybe shooting for, you know, 3, 4, maybe 5. And then in the room here, you can get yourself into groups of, you know, whatever works, like 3 or 4, maybe 4 people would be good. I'm not quite sure how to arrange yourselves to properly social distance, but maybe see what we can do about that. And then we'll have, you know, maybe 20 minutes or so to talk. And, in terms of this discussion, Carrie left us with a couple of questions to consider over the week. One of them was to consider how you express your commitment to what you most value and how do you help yourself to remember it. And another question she's had was, how do you create a space where you can surrender your complaint? Or in other words, a place where you can let go of your small personal agenda and connect with something larger than yourself. And, or to express these questions in another way, you might consider, you know, what does devotion mean to you? And what is your relationship with ritual and devotional practices? And how do they help you? Or do they help you, maybe even? Connect with your highest aspirations. So this sense of Carrie's questions, maybe what practices actually help you to express and connect with that aspiration. So you can go ahead and get into your groups, form your groups, and then I'll call you back in 20 minutes or so. Okay, it looks like, as far as I can tell from my kind of nest here where I feel like I don't dare move with all my wires and things, that everybody has pretty much returned. So we have some time now for people to, if they would like to share anything about what they discussed in their groups, any comments or any questions you might have, the floor is open. I'm a little unsure if I can see who has their hands up and stuff, but on the Zoom platform. Oh, good. Okay. Maybe Cheryl, you can, if they come, you can identify them, because I don't know if I can see everybody. Or if anyone is in the room here, you know, you can. You can, of course, just raise your hand. In the room, a lot of people are going to be able to do this. Oh, okay, Iris.
Yeah, hi, thanks. So can you hear me, Lyndall?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you.
Great. So in our group, I think pretty much we kind of were all not really into rituals and devotion, and yet we sort of quickly found that, in fact, we're either practicing some of them, mm-hmm. or we realized that we were moving towards it, and some of the ways that we were meditating involved some amount of devotion, and that as we understood it through Carrie's talk and Tawari's ideas and your contributions, and that it was something that became important to us, and that we wanted to keep closer than we maybe previously thought we might want to. And I hope that I haven't mischaracterized the contributions from my groupmates too much.
Well, thank you, Iris. I mean, I think what you're saying that you experienced and your group members experienced, I feel like it's just really similar to what I've experienced too, considering this topic, from not really thinking about it as being necessarily something that was a big part of my practice, to really seeing in a broader perspective how important it is. So that's really interesting. I wonder if many of us probably are having that experience. It's sort of introducing us to a way of thinking about our practice that we hadn't been that much aware of. So thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Linda, in our group, what we talked about was devotion to the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are so many different ways of understanding what the truth is. So some of us spoke about devotion to things like the Four Noble Truths, the Brahma Viharas, mm-hmm. the Paramis, and those ideals, but also the truth behind those ideals. You know, holding ourselves to a standard of conduct.
Mm-hmm.
And recognizing when we drift away from that, and in our active devotion, coming back to that and saying, you know, no, this is important to behave this way,
mm-hmm.
to speak this way. So that was one of the things that we commented on. It's a kind of a devotional practice.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's also just treating ourselves with kindness and having that as a devotional practice. And however mm-hmm. that takes shape during the course of the day, spending time in nature, spending time with animals, spending time with mm-hmm. A morning ritual, just kind of set the day up. And that was comforting and also very essential, very important.
Yeah, thank you. That's, when we think about it, so many of the things that we do have that component of devotion. And I like that way you expressed it about devotion to the truth in the sense of, you know, really devotion in these different ways, you know, devotion to the Four Noble Truths, devotion to different aspects of the teachings, and devotion, you know, also devotion to, you know, really having the desire to see this for ourselves too is great devotion, you know, that kind of sense of urgency and practice. So yeah, I think many of us can relate to that, and I think recognize these devotional aspects that we never thought about. Yeah, thank you.
Hi, Linda. I can't quite figure out how to raise the fake hand. So here I am with my
real hand. I hear you. Okay. We all hear you.
So something is, I'm reminded of a feeling when you start to put words to your experience, because I too was feeling like, oh, I don't do much ritual or devotion. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, my life is this. We see aspects that we're actually becoming devotion or, you know, realizing the sacred. And this other thing came up too, was that it's helping. It's good for us to remember our goodness in this way. It's so easy for us to, you know, oh, I don't quite cut it here. And I was so unskillful today doing this and that. This is reminding, I think it's also helps nourish that heart quality, that, you know, to recognize our own goodness, that is a practice in and of itself. And I think it ties into devotion and a ritual, because we can forget that part, you know. Anyway, mm-hmm. I can forget it, so
mm-hmm. Yeah, very 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 true, very very true. Yeah, and I think, you know, one sense of having a sense of connection to the sacred in our practice, we begin to have a sense of connection to the sacred in ourselves and in other people, you know. And it is important to remember that. Yeah, I know that that's one of the things that's recommended very much when we do metta practice, is to spend some time when we're doing, you know, metta for ourselves, to spend some time remembering our own goodness and reflecting on our own goodness, you know, not in a like egotistical way, but just to recognize that these beautiful qualities of the heart actually are there in us. And we can, they're not something that's so foreign. And I think that's an important part of these practices. Yeah. Thank you.
One of the things that was coming up for me was how, and I spoke about this within the group, was how rituals sort of works in direct contradiction to impermanence. So sort of navigating. And as I was thinking, I was like, well, how can I appreciate ritual if I'm supposed to appreciate impermanence? But as I was talking to Cheryl and the group, it was easy to sort of figure out that impermanence helps me at least appreciate ritual and vice versa. I don't know if I'm articulating this well, but in knowing that something may go away, I have a deeper sense of gratitude for the ritual, which is really nice.
So sort of having that appreciation of impermanence makes it all the more important to sort of do that ritual to show your appreciation for that thing, or to kind of tune into the preciousness of that thing. Yeah. That's a nice way to think of that. Because I can sort of see the way in which we might think of ritual as being something to try to build a structure that we feel is going to last, which isn't exactly what we're really doing. I mean, in a way, we kind of want a certain consistency to help us to have some continuity, you know, habits and things like that. But I like that sense of remembering impermanence as a way of connecting to the preciousness of everything, because it isn't always going to be there. It's going to change. Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting point and way of thinking about it. And I think at some point, Twary is also going to be talking on one of these Mondays about the kind of the pitfalls and drawbacks of rituals. So that will be something else to think about. And one of them might be this sense of trying to use rituals to build something solid, relying on the rituals to make something solid that isn't solid. So, yeah. It's something to think about too, and she may talk more about that. Any last comments that we might have, or are we kind of it looks like maybe this is everybody that wants to speak has had their chance to speak. We just have a few minutes left. Do we have any announcements or no, gentlemen? Yeah, okay. I kind of didn't think we did because we had them last week. So for this last few minutes of the evening together, let's take a few moments to come together and sit in silence. And to take some time for that special ritual of sharing the merit that has been generated from our practice together. You know, realizing that coming together like this, sitting together, meditating, listening to the Dharma, talking about the Dharma, creating community, it really creates a force for good that we can share with those we love. So maybe taking a moment to think about someone that you might want to share the merit with, maybe someone who's having a difficult time right now or in pain, or who just comes to mind for some reason. May this merit generated from our practice touch you, bring you peace, and moving on from this one person, if we can, to have a sense of sharing with all people, all beings. May all beings benefit from the merit of our practice. May all beings be safe, protected, happy and peaceful. May all beings find true freedom and liberation. So thank you all so much for being here tonight, for practicing together on Zoom and in person.